Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A death in Antarctica, sex at the Flickers, and kidnapped at the pub. It's January 1922.
100 years from today.
Update: the messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Representatives of the British, French, and Belgian governments are meeting at Cannes to discuss Germany's inability to make reparations payments. The value of the Deutschmark has fallen to 1/32nd of the pound, or 1/133rd of a British penny. One US dollar is now worth 6,600 marks, and American banks are refusing to accept German currency for payment of debts. The general election has been held in the so-called Republic of Central Lithuania. A majority of the inhabitants has voted to remain part of Poland, but the Lithuanian government is refusing to recognize the vote. In Moscow, the Soviet regime has published statistical data showing that since the October Revolution that brought the Bolsheviks to power, 1,766,118 people have been executed. Dogsamin Badu, the Prime Minister of Mongolia and a founder of the Mongolian People's Revolutionary Party, has resigned after just 6 months. He had become very unpopular after a vigorous campaign to fit Mongol customs to Bolshevik norms, including the banning of long hair and ladies' jewellery. After forcing Mr. Badu out, the new Premier Sonamin Damdinbazar has accused him and other ministers of corruption and treason and had Mr. Badu arrested. The delegation of the Far Eastern Republic, currently in Washington, has revealed what it claims to be secret documents demonstrating a military alliance between France and Japan intended to secure Japanese domination of Siberia in exchange for protection of French interests in Russia. France and Japan have both denounced the documents as forgeries. In compliance with the Treaty of Ankara, France has begun the withdrawal of its occupation forces from Turkey, starting with the departure of French army troops in Mersin province and of the French Armenian Legion from the city of Adana, where they were there to prevent further actions against the Armenian minority. Second-hand hats, second-hand clothes, but would you take a second-hand elephant? In India, Vilaya Raja of Nilambur once prayed to Lord Krishna to protect the royal family and its property from attack, and said if his prayers were heard, he would give an elephant to the temple. His prayers were granted, and the royal family of Nilambur has now presented their 12th elephant to the Guruvaya temple. Guruvaya Keshavan is about 10 years old and stands over 10.5 feet high. He is a magnificent creature who enjoys carrying many persons upon his back. In British Palestine, the first elections have been held for the newly established Supreme Muslim Council, created to oversee religious courts and Islamic finances in the territory. The Mufti of Jerusalem, Amin al-Husseini, a descendant of Muhammad through his grandson, also called Muhammad, has been chosen as the council's first leader and his office upgraded to Grand Mufti. He is an implacable opponent of Zionism, but local officials are said to regard him as useful. In Dublin, ABK, the Times correspondent, London Times that is, not Irish Times, was kidnapped by armed members of the Irish Republican Army while having lunch in a pub in Leeson Street. Three men with revolvers burst in and ordered him to get into a car, saying, "If you don't, we will riddle you." They took him to a remote farmhouse and tried him for purporting to give the views of people in Cork on the new agreement for an Irish dominion and publishing, quote, news concerning the army which had not been authorised. After his conviction, they drove Mr. Kay back to Dublin and have now released him. Meanwhile, Eamon de Valera offered his resignation as president of the so-called Irish Republic, telling its parliament, the Dáil Éireann, give me a vote of confidence so that I can stand on the rock of an independent Irish Republic. If you want this treaty, you can elect someone else. Instead, the Dáil Éireann voted 64-57 to approve the agreement, which Mr. de Valera dismissed as, quote, not a legal act, and said that only the Irish people can disestablish the republic which they have set up by their own will. In turn, President de Valera was narrowly defeated for re-election as president of the Dáil Éireann and replaced by Arthur Griffith. The so-called Parliament then adjourned to give Mr. Griffith time to begin organising the provisional government of what will be known in South African fashion as the Irish Free State. In the United States, the peace dollar, the new silver dollar issued by the US Mint, has been put into circulation just 6 days after the first coins were struck. The dollar shows the Goddess of Liberty on the obverse and on the other side a bald-headed eagle clutching an olive branch. Construction has begun on a bridge over the Delaware River between Philadelphia, Pennsylvania and Camden, New Jersey. It has been more than a century since proposals were first made to connect these states by something other than ferry service. The governors of Pennsylvania and New Jersey both participated in the groundbreaking ceremony.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss, my wire. You hear me?
Send me a kiss by wire, baby, my heart's on fire. And when your heart's on fire, you want that wire fast. Germany may be increasingly broke, but it has inaugurated a new wireless telegraphy service between Berlin and Hamburg. The service is called Blitzfunk, which means lightning spark, because it's very fast. In the demonstration, a message brought to the main Berlin telegraph office at 9 in the morning was then transmitted to Hamburg at 9:03, where it was transcribed and telephoned to the addressee at 9:10 before delivery of the telegram. In Canada, a 14-year-old boy, Leonard Thompson, has become the first human being on the planet to receive an injection of what they call insulin as a treatment for diabetes. The dose was administered at Toronto General Hospital by Dr. James Collip. Belgium has instituted bilingualism, with government documents henceforth to be printed in both French and Flemish. The American inventor Hiram A. Farrand has been granted a patent for a flexible steel tape with a slight curvature for ease of extension and retraction that can be used to measure lengths of up to several feet. In entertainment news, the first million-dollar photoplay, Foolish Wives, has opened at New York's Central Theatre. On its journey from the West Coast, a special railway carriage was installed with photo-cutting equipment so that editors could trim the feature down from 30 reels to 14 reels. Foolish Wives is written and directed by Eric von Stroheim, who is also the featured player as a fake count who seduces rich women and steals their money. Variety hails it as, quote, a sensational sex melodrama, but Photoplay calls it an insult to American ideals and womanhood.
Every morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but money.
Every morning, every evening, ain't those picture stars got fun? It may be that even the most sensational sex melodrama on the screen pales next to that going on in a San Francisco courtroom. We have reported on last year's scandalous party thrown by Fatty Arbuckle in room 1219 of the St. Francis Hotel. Miss Virginia Rapp, an aspiring actress, suffered such terrible injuries that she died, and Mr. Arbuckle was charged with manslaughter. Last month, the jury deadlocked and a mistrial was declared. A second trial has now begun with the same judge, prosecutors and defence counsel. In sports news, two of college football's undefeated and untied teams, the Washington and Jefferson Presidents and the California Golden Bears, have played to a scoreless tie in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. Both teams will be ranked as uncrowned champions of the 1921 season. On the exact same day in the other major postseason game, the Aggies of Texas A&M defeated the Praying Colonels of Center College 22-14 at Dallas, Texas. The game was notable for the innovation of a 12th man by Texas A&M when a student among the crowd is designated to be ready to enter the game. This sounds as if it could have the makings of a tradition. Hans Kronold was a Polish Jew who became a much sought-after musician in the New York Symphony and other American orchestras. He was the first cellist to have a sound recording made of his playing.
Cello solo, Träumerei, played by Hans Kronold, Edison Record.
Mr. Kronold is dead at 49. Suda Dipyaratana, the princess of Ratanakosin, was the highest-ranking female member of the Siamese royal family and a great benefactress to the country's medical system. Her Royal Highness is dead of tuberculosis at 44. Sir Ernest Shackleton went from a small village in County Kildare to the wastes of Antarctica and an inspirational role in the annals of polar exploration. His latest expedition was supposed to be a circumnavigation of the Antarctic continent. But after arriving at the British territory of South Georgia and being examined by the ship's physician, who advised him to give up alcohol, Sir Ernest, just moments later, suffered a fatal heart attack. He was 47. Maria Louise Baldwin was the first Negress to serve as a school principal in New England and of an overwhelmingly white school. She was a pioneer in American education and was delivering a speech at the Copley Plaza in Boston when she collapsed and died. Miss Baldwin was 67. The village of Dolgerville in New York State lies northwest of Albany and Schenectady and was named for Alfred Dolger, the German-born inventor and industrialist. Thanks to Mr. Dolger, Dolgerville can boast the first electric dynamo powered by water, the first felt slippers and shoes made in America, and the first public kindergarten in New York State. It was the first village upstate to be lit by electricity and the first with its own socialistic welfare system, including a generous pension rising to 100% of wages after 25 years' service. For all that, the villagers can thank Mr. Dolger. In 1819, he was financially ruined and moved from Dolgerville to California. He was on a world tour when he died in Milan at the age of 73. He will be buried in the village that bears his name. Your world news update. What a month it's turning out to be in Ireland. In just the last few days, Mr. Winston Churchill, speaking on behalf of the government, has declared that, quote, the King has been pleased at the moment when the provisional Irish government is due to take effect to grant general amnesty with respect to all offences committed in Ireland from political motives prior to the operation of the truce 11th July last. The release of the prisoners to which amnesty applies may begin forthwith. It is the King's confident hope that this act of oblivion will aid in powerfully establishing relations of friendship and goodwill between the peoples of Great Britain and Ireland. The amnesty applies to over 1,000 persons presently incarcerated. Shortly thereafter, the otherwise stillborn Parliament of Southern Ireland met in Dublin to ratify formally the Anglo-Irish Agreement and to appoint Michael Collins as chairman of the provisional government of what will be known as the Irish Free State. Mr. Collins and his cabinet were then invited to Dublin Castle, seat of English power for three quarters of a millennium, through the Lordship of Ireland, the Kingdom of Ireland, and the United Kingdom. The Lord Lieutenant, Viscount Fitzalan, invited the one-time revolutionaries to make themselves at home and start governing. The unexpected order of business was the seizure of the Rotunda Concert Hall by a group of unemployed Dubliners protesting, quote, the apathy of the authorities. They flew from one of the windows neither the Union flag nor the Irish tricolour, but rather the red flag of Bolshevism, which in turn attracted an angry mob to the scene. The occupation has now ended, and the protesters were happy to leave the building under the protection of the Royal Irish Constabulary.
Raps on the ears and high in the middle, tell me if you know. Don't you think that you little riddles, raps on the ears and high in the middle, you can find me on the map if you look high and low. The O's are frowning high in the middle, always die, oh, that's the riddle, raps on the ears and high in the middle.
Round on the ends and high in the middle. German war reparations were high right from the start, but for the foreseeable future, around. That's to say, a big fat zero. At their conference at Cannes, the Allies agreed, because of the increasing worthlessness of the Deutschmark and the broader financial crisis in Germany, to permit Berlin temporarily to suspend all reparations payments. The conference broke up abruptly following the unexpected resignation of French Prime Minister Aristide Briand. He has been replaced by the former Premier, Raymond Poincaré. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The Allied Commission has agreed, in effect, to end the prosecution of German nationals accused of committing wartime atrocities. The Leipzig war crimes trials will no longer proceed because the Allies have concluded that the lenient sentences handed out by the judges of the Weimar Republic have made the prosecutions a joke. Otto Ballerstedt is said to be one of the two most charismatic speakers in German politics. He favours devolving Germany into a decentralised association of German-speaking kingdoms and duchies, similar to its pre-unification state. The Weimar Republic's other charismatic speaker, Adolf Hitler, is bitterly opposed to this. Last autumn, he led a group of men from his National Socialist German Workers' Party to the Munich Löwenbräukeller, determined to prevent Herr Ballerstedt from giving his scheduled lecture. Herr Hitler forced his way to the stage and brutally assaulted his political rival. He has now been sentenced to 3 months in prison. The first elections have been held for the Vilnius Sejm, the parliament of the Republic of Central Lithuania. They may also be the last elections for that parliament, since they were held for the principal purpose of voting for the Polish government to annex what is no more than a puppet state of Warsaw. The candidates elected were almost all of Polish ancestry, as the vote was boycotted by most of the ethnic Lithuanians in the Vilnius region. In Lithuania proper, the National Assembly has voted to abolish capital punishment as well as titles of nobility. Little nobility among the present government. Kazys Grinius has resigned as Prime Minister, along with the rest of his ministry, in the wake of the so-called saccharin scandal, in which contraband foodstuffs were being smuggled to Bolshevik Russia in Lithuania's diplomatic bags. Is it a quarter to midnight or beyond in the Vatican? Earlier this month, Pope Benedict XV celebrated Mass with the nuns of St. Martha's House and then waited in the rain for his driver. He caught a cold. The cold turned to influenza and then pneumonia. And the newspapers in London and Paris are now reporting that His Holiness is dead. The Vatican is denying the reports, but the end seems to be very nigh for this papacy. Paul Hyman's, president of the League of Nations, has called for the evacuation of 120,000 Armenian Christians from Turkey. In an address to the League Council, Mr. Hyman's read a telegram from the Armenian Catholic Patriarchate asking for League assistance in protecting Christians in Cilicia from further violence from the Turks. In the United States, the former Navy Secretary Truman H. Newberry looks like he will be staying in the Senate. In the 1918 election in Michigan, Mr. Newberry, the Republican, narrowly defeated the Democrat Henry Ford, the automobile manufacturer and pacifist, famously antipathetic to Jews. The victory was at considerable expense, and Mr. Ford's objections resulted in a criminal investigation and Senator Newberry's conviction under the Federal Corrupt Practices Act. The senator appealed the decision, and the Supreme Court ruled that the Corrupt Practices Act was unconstitutional. Now the Senate has voted by 46-41 to allow Mr. Newberry to retain his seat. 9 Republicans joined all 32 Democrats in opposing his presence in the chamber, and the Senate as a whole expressed its disapproval for the amount of money he spent. The senator claims to have spent $170,000, of which over $140,000 was on advertising and publicity, but the various investigations have put the actual sum at something closer to a staggering $1 million. Just for a Senate seat. America's Postmaster General Will Hayes has announced his resignation in order to become the first chairman of a newly formed industry group, the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America.
In Grandma's day, the only way they had of making love, they'd sit and spoon while Mr. Moon was watching from above. But nowadays, the latest craze you'll find is all the go. Each loving heart, though kept apart, can love by radio. Love her by radio. You will find it radio. If you want to reach your heart's desire, you won't have to send her word by wire. You snap a fire, love her by radio. Even when you're all alone, think of all the fun that they can have both night and day, listening in to what the lovey-doveys have to say. I'll bet the things they hear would make a bachelor's hair turn gray when you love her by the radio phone.
It's getting easier to love her by radio, at least in Wisconsin and Minnesota, both of which states can now boast their first radio stations. In Madison, the Department of Physics at the University of Wisconsin has been assigned the call letters WHA for general entertainment broadcasts on 360 meters, farm and weather reports on 485 meters, and intercollegial communications on 410 meters. Likewise, in Minneapolis, the University of Minnesota has gone on the air under the call sign WLB. These are the first two educational institutions in America to be granted radio licenses. The flight from London's Croydon Airport to Paris went very smoothly. The Handley Page transport biplane was coming into land at Le Bourget when it crashed. All 5 passengers and crew are dead. The American confectioner Harry Burt has applied for a patent for the process of manufacturing a melted chocolate coating to be applied to ice cream. His intention is to sell his so-called Good Humor bar from ice cream trucks. However, a patent for a similar chocolate-coated brick of ice cream has just been granted to Christian Kent Nelson of Iowa, whose product is to be known as Eskimo Pie, surely a name for the ages.
When somebody says goodbye to me, oh, I'm sad as I can be. Not so with this loving Romeo. He seems to take a lot of pleasure saying goodbye to his friends. Good-bye, bye-bye, 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 bye-bye. Good-bye, don't cry. The little choo-choo, the little train, that takes me away from you. No, no word can tell how sad it makes me. Kiss me, tootsie, and then, do it over again. And though I yearn, new things to learn, I'll keep playing solitaire until I return. That, tootsie, don't cry.
Tootsie Roll Inventor, goodbye. Who does not love a Tootsie Roll? The first penny candy to be individually wrapped was created by Leo Hirschfeld in 1907 and named for his daughter Clara, whom everybody called Tootsie. The last couple of years were rough for Mr. Hirschfeld, forced out of a company whose fortunes he had transformed. At the Monterey Hotel in Manhattan, he was found dead in his room of a single gunshot, alongside a terse note saying, "Sorry, but could not help it." The inventor of the Tootsie Roll was 53. Ben Scheib was similarly innovative. The owner of the American League's Philadelphia Athletics is credited with the invention of the automated stitching machinery that makes standardized baseballs. He is dead at 83. And another inventor of a sort, George B. Selden, was a patent lawyer who chanced to see the mammoth internal combustion engine invented by George Brayton at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia in 1876, and then figured out how to shrink it. He filed the first ever U.S. patent for what we now know as an automobile in 1879. The witness who signed that application was a local bank teller called George Eastman, who later became famous for his own innovation, the Kodak camera. Mr. Selden's patent was eventually granted, and for many years he received a royalty of 0.75% on every automobile sold in America. The four-wheeled gravy train ended a decade ago when Henry Ford won a legal victory over Mr. Selden, declaring that, quote, "It is perfectly safe to say that George Selden has never advanced the automobile industry in a single particular, and it would perhaps be further advanced than it is now if he had never been born." Mr. Selden is dead at 75.
Hurrah, hurrah, the flag to make you free. So we sang the chorus from Atlantic to the sea while we were marching to Georgia.
Just four American soldiers at the Battle of Atlanta in 1864 won the Medal of Honor, the highest and most prestigious military decoration in the United States. One of that quartet was Milton Haney, who 2 years earlier had been appointed chaplain of the 55th Illinois Voluntary Infantry Regiment. On July 22nd, 1864, the chaplain turned fighting man and picked up a musket. As his Medal of Honor citation puts it, Milton Haney, quote, "rendered heroic service in retaking the federal works which had been captured by the enemy." Known to his comrades down the decades and ever after as the Fighting Chaplain, Mr. Haney is dead at the age of 96. Barely 12 hours after the evening papers in London and Paris erroneously reported his death, and the Reichstag suspended proceedings out of respect. The Pope is dead. Benedict XV fell into a coma and died at around 6 in the morning in Vatican City. His Holiness was 67 and had been pontiff for just 7 years. A procession of the Palatine Guard, the Swiss Guard, and others has borne his body through the Apostolic Palace to the Papal Throne Room, where he will lie in state before burial in St. Peter's Basilica. The so-called World Court, more properly known as the Permanent Court of International Justice, has held its first session at the Peace Palace at The Hague. 9 judges and 3 deputy judges elected Bernard Loder of the Netherlands Supreme Court as the first president of the World Court.
Pack up your tumbles in your old kid's bag and smile, smile, smile. While you're a Lucifer, delight your fag. Smile, boys, that's the start. What's the use of worrying? It never was worthwhile, sir. Pack up your tumbles in your old kit bag and smile, smile, smile.
Maybe it's time to pack up your old kit bag for good and stick it away in the attic. According to the respected French war hero General Marie-Eugène Debeney, the next war will be fought with, quote, tanks, aeroplanes, and gas served by specially trained crews. But not by millions of infantry. The front lines will be manned only by skeleton detachments serving as observers of what's going on, while machines and chemicals do all the fighting. Old-fashioned warring in China. After only a month in office, Liang Shiyi has been forced to resign as Premier of the Republic of China. His dismissal is the result of a conflict between 2 warlords, Wu Peifu of the Zhili clique and Liang's supporter Zhang Zhuolin of the Fengtian clique. There is talk of an impending Zhili-Fengtian war.
Where we stop to rest our tired caravan. Hindustan, where the painted peacock proudly stretched his band.
In India, at a demonstration by Bengali independence supporters, police opened fire on the crowd. Hundreds are said to be dead, perhaps thousands. Some were hit by bullets, but many more were trampled to death in the panic that followed. Preparations for the new Irish Free State continue. The Dublin Gazette, the equivalent of the London Gazette, the official government newspaper of record in Ireland since 1705, has published its final issue, and its offices have been turned over to the provisional government of the Irish Free State. The Beggar's Bush Barracks, just south of the River Liffey in Dublin, have been turned over by the British Army to the new so-called National Army, comprised of former Irish Republican Army soldiers who now support the Anglo-Irish settlement and the new Free State. Have you seen the recent photo play Get Rich Quick Wallingford? For some picture-goers in the United States, it was the last thing they did see, just before 9 p.m. during a showing at the Knickerbocker Theatre in Washington. The roof of the picture palace collapsed under the weight of 29 inches of snow. that had fallen during a blizzard. The roof fell down upon the audience in the theatre balcony, and the balcony in turn fell down on those in the seats below. 96 people are dead and 133 are injured. Among those dead is one-time Congressman Andrew Jackson Barchfeld of Pennsylvania. He was 58. Mr. Barchfeld's former colleagues in the United States House of Representatives have voted 230 to 119 for an anti-lynching bill that would make lynching a federal crime. It is not clear when the bill will come before the Senate. During the late World War, General John Pershing heard many European military bands and decided America should have one of its own. Now the head of the army has established the United States Army Band. Its first 33 members have reported to Fort Hunt to begin practicing. In more conventional military deployments, a detachment of U.S. Marines has disembarked from USS Galveston at Corinto, Nicaragua, in order to protect America's embassy in the capital, Managua. We reported earlier this month on 14-year-old Leonard Thompson, who became the first person anywhere on the planet to receive an injection of insulin to treat his diabetes. It was given to him by James Collip at Toronto General Hospital. Unfortunately, young Leonard had an allergic reaction. He has now been given a second injection, and this time it was successful. In sports news, the University of Illinois football team has disqualified 9 of its players after confirmation that they accepted payment to play in a semi-professional game in Carlinville, Illinois, late last year. Each player is said to have received $200, which is not to be sneezed at for a college student. Only 66 of the 1,200 seats at New York's Aeolian Hall were filled when the English pianist Myra Hess walked out on the stage for her unheralded American debut. Yet the few who were there all left knowing they had heard something extraordinary. As the critic Richard Aldrich put it in the New York Times, Miss Hess is a true interpreter and makes her interpretations deeply engrossing through their vitality, their finesse and subtle qualities, their intensity and glowing warmth, in Schumann's Papillon and much else. Another premiere, Carl Nielsen's Symphony No. 5, was completed just 9 days before its first performance in Copenhagen, and that left insufficient rehearsal time. It was a mixed verdict from the critics. They didn't care for the second movement, but they did like the first. Do you know the composer Felix Borowski? This is his piece for violin and piano, Adoration. Well, just as Nielsen's Symphony No. 5 was getting underway in Copenhagen, Mr. Borowski was shot at with a pistol and then beaten with it in his Chicago apartment. His musical secretary has been arrested and has confessed to the crime, telling the police that the composer had ruined his career as a pianist and that he had, quote, nothing to live for. Viscount Bryce ventured a long way from his native Ulster. He travelled across the Russian Empire and up Mount Ararat above the tree line, where he found a piece of hand-hewn timber he believed to have come from Noah's Ark. He retraced the steps of Alexis de Tocqueville through the United States, but found democracy in America somewhat diminished from its Jacksonian glory days, and predicted ever-widening inequality in the decades ahead. He served as Chief Secretary for Ireland and then His Britannic Majesty's Ambassador to the United States, where he made many friends from President Roosevelt down. Lord Bryce is dead at 83. Liszt's first Hungarian Rhapsody, played by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Arthur Nikisch. Mr. Nikisch was born in Hungary, but his talent took him around the world to important positions in London, Boston, and Berlin. He became one of the pioneers of modern conducting, admired by Toscanini, Sir Henry Wood, Wilhelm Furtwängler, and Fritz Reiner, the young conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony, who says, "It was Arthur Nikisch who told me that I should never wave my arms in conducting and that I should use my eyes to give cues." Maestro Nikisch is dead at 66. Elizabeth Cochran Seaman is better known as Nellie Bly, a pioneering American journalist who reported on the appalling conditions in the women's lunatic asylum on what is now Welfare Island in New York by going undercover as an inmate. She then shaved 10% of Phileas Fogg's time by going around the world in 72 days on assignment for the New York World. Nellie Bly is dead at 57. And that's the way of the world, January 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.